Composites Lounge, der Podcast mit Praxiswissen für Unternehmer, Geschäftsführer und Führungskräfte aus dem Bereich der Faserverbund, Werkstoffproduktion und Anwendung. Wir präsentieren dir regelmäßig Innovationen und anwendungsspezifisches Know-how, das deine Leichtbau- und Festigkeitsanforderungen löst. Präsentiert von deinem Host Ilkay Özgesoğlu aus Bayreuth.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us today for this webinar titled Reinventing Quality and Efficiency in Aviation, the Technology that Learned to Control. It is brought to you by Composites World and presented by Sense Expert. My name is Ginger Gardner and I am Senior Technical Editor at Composites World. In this exclusive interview-style webinar, Sense Expert Managing Director Dr. Alexander Kalupka will sit down with Jorge Blanco Fernandez, R&T Engineer at INSEA, the Spanish entity of Testia, which is actually an Airbus company that focuses on NDT and inspection. They will uncover the story of how dielectric analysis, or DEA, once a lab-based measurement tool, was transformed into a comprehensive solution for process control in composites manufacturing. Discover how Testia, which is constantly seeking new technologies to improve manufacturing processes, chose dielectric measurement for its potential, only to encounter the challenges of complex data analysis, and how Sense Expert has worked to provide a solution, turning dielectric technology into a scalable system with automated data analysis, real-time process adjustments, and in-mold material behavior insights that directly connect to quality standards. Our agenda today will include a discussion of dielectric measurement technology, how to comply with industry regulations, the transformation of this technology to a full solution, using Sense Expert for process control, and the benefits and impact on aviation manufacturing. Our presenters today are Dr. Alexander Kalupka and Jorge Blanco Fernandez. Dr. Kalupka is a polymer expert who, after studying physics, started his career at the Fraunhofer Institute for Chemical Technology in Augsburg, Germany, in the Department of Thermophysical and Chemical Analysis and Rheology. He then began work in the analyzing and testing business of the Netsch Group. With over 10 years of experience in R&D, sales, and general management, he founded Sense Expert in 2021, where he is running Netsch's first corporate venture as managing director and CTO. Jorge Blanco Fernandez began his career in 2017 in jigs and tools maintenance at the Airbus Illescas factory, which produces composite wing and fuselage structures for the A350. He then worked for the engineering firm CT Engineeros and the research center Imdea Materiales, before again working for Airbus, this time on the A330 MRTT production team in Getafe, Spain. In 2021, Jorge was asked to work on a project at Airbus Illescas on behalf of INSEA, the Spanish entity within Testia. The main goal of that project was to achieve composites cure monitoring with dielectric sensors, which were designed by Sense Expert. Jorge continues to work with INSEA as a research and technology engineer for composite manufacturing processes and has a master's degree in aeronautical engineering from the Polytechnic University of Madrid. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you to please submit your questions by typing them into the Q&A pane on the control panel at the right of your screen. We will answer these during our Q&A session at the end of the presentation. And now I'm going to hand it over to Alex and Jorge.
Thank you very much, Ginger. Thank you for the nice introduction and thank you for Composites World for hosting us. Jorge, thank you for being part of this webinar. I think the audience will have a very nice hour for the evening in Europe and for the morning before lunchtime in the US, where we will explain how we managed to get a measurement technology with a high potential into a really solution that can help the composite manufacturing and aviation to reach new levels of efficiency. Jorge, thank you for being here. And my question to you is, what was the reason behind that Airbus has started to watch out for sensor technologies to monitor the material behavior during production many, many years ago? Even if Airbus has been working in composites industries and manufacturing for decades already.
Yeah, I would say definitely that the main reason could be the increasing of efficiency in production, but of course ensuring the quality. As you may know, in the aircraft industry, we have always in mind the safety, and Airbus, as other manufacturers, has the highest safety standards in the quality assurance of components. And this safety is based on some protocols relying on materials data sheets by suppliers. But the experience shows that sometimes these safety times to ensure the quality of composite components could be lower a little bit when having the chance to look into the material behavior during curing and having a reliable solution for doing so. So Airbus for many years have been looking for this kind of solution to look inside the behavior of the prepregs or resins when they are curing, just to how can we reduce the manufacturing times without affecting the quality and of course the safety of the product of the parts manufactured by Airbus. Yeah.
Great. Thank you for this insight. Another question that comes to my mind when talking about this topic, because what we observe since many years when talking to customers and working together with them is they relied on the material data sheets the material suppliers are supplying. But from experience, we see that customers are not sticking to these cure cycles that are mentioned in the material data sheets. Sometimes yes, but in most of the cases not, because processes have been changed. The manufacturing environment has been changed, and therefore customers have different manufacturing environments, and therefore they change the cure cycles by themselves. Is this also a topic why Airbus is looking into getting insights from the material behavior to really ensure that the component is really cured when not sticking to, or when not being able to stick to the material data sheet anymore?
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That could be a very, very good summary. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Then, Jorge, second question. Why did you decide for working with the dielectric analysis? So I guess you have looked into other technologies as well. What was the decision that made the way that you decided for dielectric analysis?
I would say that the main reason behind we select the your technology was your capability of measuring the curing of thermosets. Of course, we also saw that you have implemented your technology in other fields or in other industries, and that was something very good for us, and that was very attractive because we wanted something that could be implemented in manufacturing, not only in labs. So I would say that the main reason is your capability of measuring the curing of thermosets. And after that you have a little bit of experience implementing that technology in the manufacturing process of other industries.
Great. And the next question, there are other technologies as well that are capable of measuring the curing. What was the reason in terms of sensors or measurement principle that made the decision for the DEA, besides the experience we have with ENERGE and the knowledge we have since, now it's 2024, since more than 25 years within the NEDGE group. So what was the decision for the dielectric sensors above others?
Well, besides the possibility to look into the material behavior, I think it would be the easy integration of those sensors into toolings, okay? The fact that the DA can look through the component thickness up to a specific limit that is given by the component layout and the robustness with which the sensor can be manufactured.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Something else, Jorge?
No, I think that's everything I would say. I think that your capability of not only measure the resin, but also the prepregs, because you know that the effect of carbon fiber is important when we are talking about the electric sensors. That could be another benefit from your sensors, and is the capability of not just measuring the resin, but also prepregs with the carbon fiber on it. Yeah,
that's true. There, I can tell a story. It wasn't planned so, but because you mentioned that to even measure the carbon fibers, for me, it's standard at the moment. But when I started my journey with the dielectric analysis, it was not standard. So when I started to work with dielectric analysis, back in 2012 at the Fraunhofer Institute in Augsburg. There, we even had to coat the sensors with a dry fabric or whatever, where the resin can flow through, but the sensor was not allowed to get in contact with electrically conductive fillers like carbon fibers. And we made our way. So that time, I started a collaboration with Netch Analyzing and Testing already to coat the sensor and to give the coating the possibility to really get in touch with the material, to be mechanically resistive so that the sensor can really be treated like the entire mold. So you can dry ice clean, you can use soft metals to clean if some material is sticking on top. And yeah, exactly. That was the way I was directly involved with. And we really made it happen after I joined Netch Analyzing and Testing in 2016, where we then really developed the first series manufacturing coated sensors. I think we launched them in 2018, if I'm right.
Yes, I think so. Because before that, we used like glass fiber to measure the carbon fiber. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's still one of the USPs we have, that we have a sensor technology that really can get in touch with electrically conductive fillers within the resin. We even have use cases where there are just 7 to 9% of resin inside natural stone and stuff. And there is a lot of water inside, and you can still see the cure behavior there. Great. But now we have talked about the technology and why the decision has been made. Now for the audience, I will jump back a little bit and will explain the dielectric measurement principles. So what is really happening within? So you can see here on this picture, it's a carbon fiber component. And what we do is we can look into the microscopic mobility of a material. So what we are using is that the polymer from the properties, they are partially charged. They have partial charges, so the carbon-carbon backbone and the side groups around, they define which kind of polymer do we have in front of us. If it's an epoxy, if it's a polyurethane or whatever. And these side groups around the carbon-carbon backbone are usually partially charged. And in addition, smaller molecule chains that are not connected to each other, they even have partial charges. And exactly these charges, this is what we use for measuring. So we penetrate the polymer with an alternating electric field. And we give, therefore, the dipoles the possibility to orient with the electric field, but also the smaller molecules with a partial charge, they can move with the electric field. And this mobility is what we measure. And this mobility is decreasing as soon as a polymer is solidifying or curing. And this gives us the direct insight into the micromolecular mobility, and we can relate this information to the cure behavior of a material. That even means, while doing so, while monitoring with the dielectric analysis inside manufacturing processes, we can detect quality criteria like degree of cure, glass transition temperature, and the flow behavior. But there are even quality criteria customers have that are going into the direction of component geometry. So is the dimensional stability given, or the mechanical performance like the E-modulus and many other things. So we have proven in specific industries already that what we can see from the chemical physical behavior in process can be directly related to quality criteria of our customers, since what we see is the chemical basis for everything else of the polymer. And to give you an insight, what does this mean? What do we really measure? What you can see here is the manufacturing of composite structures. So here you can see every single colored curve represents manufactured component. And here you can see you have three process steps that are used in here. And let's start on the top right of this plot here. You can see that all the curves come together and look like identical in process step three at the end. This means the manufacturing protocol in this manufacturing environment works very well. So every single component meets the requirements of degree of cure in this case. But what we can also see is that they are all coming together at a specific point in time earlier than the process ends. And here, while having the insight and while even taking into account what happens here in process step one, where we see a deviation, and here it's a huge deviation in terms of degree of cure between best and worst part in this case, we can see that while having an insight into the manufacturing, we can cut down cycle times. And here in this case, For this entire cycle along process step 1 to 3, we were capable of reducing the cycle time by 30% just while having the chance to look into the material behavior and then to send the signal to the machine that the component meets the requirements. And yeah, this is a huge impact we have here, and that's our philosophy as well. So we have highly sophisticated manufacturing lines and machines. And I mean, that is what especially Europe stands for, to create very great manufacturing machines. But now it's the point in time with all the regulations we even see in the European Union with the EU Green Deal law and stuff, that we need to reduce the energy consumption and that we need to reduce the material usage. And therefore, now it's the point where the material behavior, the hidden potential that is within the material, comes into the foreground. And that is where we can help our customers with, and that we even help you, Jorge, and Intestia and Airbus behind to optimize the manufacturing cycles. So now, Jorge, mm-hmm. a very, very interesting topic, I think, for our audience. How has the DA principle been approved at Testia? So what were the steps and which kind of measurements have been done? Because the standards is you usually determine degree of cure like written down in the standards with a differential scanning calorimeter and the gas transition temperature with a dynamic mechanical analyzer. So what have been the steps to verify that what the DA tells you in process meets these quality criteria you have set with an Airbus and you are using for many, many years now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that first we started with a huge series of measurements with simple part geometries, because at the beginning we just wanted to see how this technology works and how can we measure the electric properties of the resins. We started with just pure resin in an oven with no prep bricks. And we also tested some samples of these plates with DMA and DSC. So what we did is we prepare some tests. We measure the electric properties with your technology in those samples made of resin. And we compare the results obtained during the Curie monitoring with the results given with the final part that we obtained doing a DMA and DSC to evaluate the glass transition temperature and the degree of cure of these samples. This gave us the chance to correlate the DMA measurements to the existing quality standards. In the SenXpert team, what they did is they built up a machine learning model that is in charge of calculating the glass transition temperature and the degree of cure in real time during manufacturing, and furthermore can predict the time of the required end values during the current cycle. I mean, we can, with this method, we could compare the results given by the machine learning from SenXpert to with the values obtained by the DMA and DSC of those samples that were cured. The predictions of SenXpert have been validated as well through another measurement series. And we found that we were able to evaluate the critical parameters, the glass transition temperature and the degree of cure with adequate accuracy during the manufacturing. So what we did was to prepare some samples. And once we stop the cycle in different parts, we compare the results as well with those samples and the ones that given by the machine learning program or your machine learning software. And not only with finished parts, with the whole curing process or the curing process finished, but also we establish some stopping points to see what was the accuracy of your model during all the curing process. So we did like different tests with all the process, and stopping the process in intermediate points and measuring as well the curing degree and the degree of cure and the glass transition temperature on those samples.
Great. Thank you for this insight, Jorge. So it was a really extensive measurement series to prove everything. Yep. And I think we can tell the audience that we are working together since 2016. And there have been some years in between now until bringing the technology really into the manufacturing environment. Before I ask my second question, Jorge, there was a question from Nitin Gupta coming in. I see it in front of me. Coming back to the slide I showed before, how did we manage to reduce the cycle time by 30%? We really looked to the degree of cure because we found out if the degree of cure meets the requirements, we can stop the cycle because then even the mechanical performance meets the requirements of the components. So here in this case, we really look just at the degree of cure and glass transition temperature. So to both parameters, that they are within the specification of Airbus. And that is how we made it happen in real time to stop the cycle earlier and to save up to 30% of cycle time. That is what we did there. Mm-hmm. Then Jorge, a very important question that some of our customers raise from time to time, especially in aviation and aerospace, but also in the defense industry. How did you manage to implement the SenseExpert technology into the series manufacturing and to agree with all the regulations? So that is a question a lot of our customers raise because they see the regulations they are sticking to and they need to fulfill. How did you manage to bring this technology with all the regulations into the manufacturing environment?
Well, yeah, I think that that is a very good question because it's a big part, or is the most important part for the audience, I think, and is that we need to know how to go from the lab or the laboratory to a real workshop. Well, once the process was validated with those tests that I mentioned before, we need to test the equipment in a real situation. So we look for a part manufacturing in Airbus that was simple, with an accessible manufacturing process, with no high production rates, because we didn't want to impact on the deliveries of Airbus, of course. And we need, of course, a part that was made of the same material that we validated in the prior test. So we decided to test it in the A350 Section 19 beams. It's a part manufactured in Getafe. These parts are made of RTM6, a very well-known resin in Airbus because we have been using it for decades now. and of course, this part is manufactured using RTM process. That means that it's not cured in the autoclave, but it is done in a press, in a curing press or in a curing station. This is important because we didn't want to test it in prepregs because the sensors are not certified by the EASA as airworthy, and they create like a little bit prints in the part. So to avoid that, we wanted to study it first in resin before prepregs. So we installed two sensors in two different tools, and we purchased a DA equipment to SenseExpert to create a temporal setup. And we obtained the DA values of the resin in a real manufacturing process, not only in the laboratory, but also in the workshop. And we sent those data to SenseExpert to improve the actual machine learning software. And we also did some DMA and DSC to the parts that were manufactured in that curing station. And we compared the results given by the SenseExpert machine learning with the ones that were given by the DMA and DSC. All of that was processed by M&P department from Airbus, materials and processes from Airbus. And with that, we could assure that we are obtaining the degree of cure and the glass transition temperature that was necessary or that was described in the Airbus process in that curing station for that part in particular. And with the collaboration of SenseExpert and Inmapa, another Spanish company, and of course from Testia, we could implement that technology in the curing station, and we could use the curing degree as a signal trigger to start and stop the process. So that was the process that we follow. The main part to avoid the EASA part, we could say that we decided to use the DA sensors just measuring the resin that is not in contact with the real part. I mean,
so the side flow, something like a side flow. Yeah,
that's it, in a side flow. So we could measure the process in the resin, but not in contact with the part. Just in the same tool, but not in the in the part that is going to be on the aircraft in the future.
Yeah, great. Thank you for this insight, Jorge. I think that's a very interesting topic for the audience to hear. How did you manage to bring this in? You already mentioned machine learning. This brings me to the next question. So because how can we calculate the degree of cure? How can we manage to translate the signals that we measure into the quality criteria? So now we have talked about the pure measurement technology, what the DA is capable of, and how can we help you as Testia and even your mother company Airbus to improve efficiency in manufacturing. But coming from the pure DA technology, and that is related to the naming of the webinar, so the technology that learned to control, what was still missing to bring the technology, even if you have validated that the sensors are capable of calculating the degree of cure and glass transition temperature adequate to your standards? So what was still missing to bring the technology into the serious manufacturing?
Well, I would say that after validating the capability of the DA, it still was a pure measurement technology, but we needed a solution that can be integrated into our manufacturing and that is able to communicate with our existing manufacturing lines towards process automation. So I will say that that is one of the main points. And the other one, we will say that the capability of measure the degree of cure in big thicknesses or great thicknesses in prepregs, I will say, because we have a very good penetration, but when we are talking about such a very good, very big aircraft parts, maybe we will need a little bit more of penetration in the signal of the DA sensors. So I would say that those are the two points that they are a little bit of, I will not say weaknesses, I will say opportunities.
For sure.
To improve. Yeah. I will say that.
For sure. And we made some kind of project like this in the past together already with another Spanish supplier of Airbus, where we created bigger sensors and we made it happen to look through 25 millimeters of dry fiber mats, carbon fiber mats. The sensors have been integrated into a carbon fiber tooling. And we could see the flow front arriving on the top layer, so the position that was most far away from the sensor. Then we could see the set flow of the material through thickness, so the impregnation, and then we could see when the material arrived at the sensor surface, and then we could follow the curing. So there are technological possibilities to make that happen. We always have to decide what is the best benefit for you with the lowest effort that we can spend on there. So that's always the balance we have to find. Great. Thank you, Jorge.
You're welcome.
Then, based on the measurement technology, so how are we really capable of implementing the setup and how can we manage to communicate with the machine and to control the machine based on the material behavior? So what are we doing here in this case? Let's imagine we have an autoclave or maybe even a press or whatever. So let's stick with the autoclave in here. Then with the autoclave, we have our SenseExpert Edge device. The blue box is more or less the brain of our technology. So here we have the communication with the machine control system. We have the communication with the dielectric sensors, but we can even implement third-party sensors like pressure, temperature, or whatever, or even humidity if you have that within your manufacturing. So we can put all the data into the blue box here, and on top, we put in the kinetic behavior of a material, so even material science. That means we have three data sources coming together. We have the machine parameters, the profiles, for example, the temperature profiles that are being used. We have the sensor information for the material insights, and we have the material science coming from the lab. So what you can find in some material data sheets where you see degree of cure or viscosity behavior based on the cure cycle you're using. So this is the chemical physical basis, but this chemical physical basis from the lab is not capable of taking into account all the variations that can occur on the material side because of storing freezing the material, then taking it out from the fridge again, then freezing it in. Even if you, especially since Jorge has mentioned the material RTM6 that has been used for decades, there is RTM6 can be stored at room temperature for 2 weeks and we will result in the same mechanical performance of RTM6. That's totally true. But the way to get to the same degree of cure, if the material is taken out of the fridge and being used for production on day one after taking it out or on day 14, that's different. So the way to get to the same degree of cure and the mechanical performance, this is different. So the cure behavior is changing. And we can make use of this deviation here and we can cut down the cycle times while ensuring the component quality in this case. To do so, our package is separated into two levels. One level is what is going on the shop floor, and the other one is even our cloud connection. What is happening there? I come to the point in a few sentences. What is happening on the shop floor is that we have this blue box installed at the machine, communicating with the sensors, having a materials database on this blue box, and communicating with the machine. This gives us the possibility for every single component to have a digital process map and to follow the dependency between machine parameters, manufacturing cycle, and the material behavior. And even if we have more information about the lifetime and the storage of the material, then we can put it into our machine learning models as well to be more precise towards the current state of production. In addition, Jorge has mentioned machine learning models already. What we are doing is we collect the three data sources, machine parameters, material insights from the sensors, and the material database data, so the material science, into machine learning models. We put everything in and the machine learning models learn the dependencies. Why are we doing so? Because we as humans, we are restricted. We can deal maybe with 1, 2, 3 parameter variations, and we can understand what's the result in terms of mechanical performance, quality of the component. But if we talk about at the end 20, 25 parameter variations, even if we think then about aging of material and the influence of storage and material deviations, batch to batch, for example, then it's out of our scope. We as humans are not capable of then bridge the gap in between all the different variations. But that is why we use machine learning models, because machine learning models, so statistical methods from mathematics, they are capable of identifying these relationships and they can easily tell us what's the dependency and how to interact if we see deviations there. In addition, the cloud environment, besides the storage capability and visualization for our customers whenever they want and wherever they are, the machine learning retraining AI core, that's a very important topic for us, because if we think about machine learning and what we do in terms of quality control within the manufacturing, we cannot know every failure mode that can occur on the customer side. We can learn some of them in an early stage if we produce the first components with our customers together for a specific time. But from time to time, there will be failure modes that are not known by our system. And therefore, the cloud environment is very important, because from there, the customers can give us the direct feedback if it was an okay part or a not okay part. And if it was a not okay part, even, and that would be very beneficial, but it's not always necessary to give us the information what exactly was the failure. Because then our AI retraining core is starting to calculate new with the feedback from the customer. So the customer is really getting a part of our solution. And then we have a new machine learning model that knows the additional information and can be sent down to the shop floor solution to improve the efficiency of our solution within the manufacturing. And the benefit, to show you what's then the benefit for Testia here in this case, for the components we have manufactured, then you can see this is an excerpt of a specific manufacturing cycle we have done together with Testia in Spain, and what our model is doing in the background. This is what you can see on the bottom right in this green and pink plot here. What you can see, and that comes there, the world comes together between what Jorge has mentioned at the beginning with all the trials that have been done to stop components in the intermediate curing phase and then to qualify degree of cure and glass transition temperature. This is how these ground truth curves have been created that you can see here. So the blue and the purple one, the dark purple one. This is the ground truth. These are the curves that have been collected together with Testia when we have stopped components at specific times, and then we have evaluated the degree of Q and glass transition temperature. Then we have calculated the machine learning model, and from there, the machine learning models are even capable of predicting the future. So based on the data that are already coming in, so the green area, you can see in the plot that it's moving. The more data we get, the more precise the model will be. But at a specific point in time, and here it's roughly between 60 to 80 minutes, you can see the precision is increasing dramatically. And around 80 minutes plus, the model is already that precise that we can predict the end degree of Q and glass transition of the cycle. So that also means we can, in the best case, even trigger additional logistics actions that help to increase the efficiency. But while having a look into the material behavior and calculating degree of Q and glass transition temperature in real time, we have the possibility to cut down the additional safety times. And this is what you can see on this histogram plot on the top right. Here you can see the amount of components where we have specific average cut down potentials, so saving times. And here you can see the histogram consists of 44 components that have been manufactured in a specific time frame together with Testia. And we can see that coming from an initial cycle time of 117 minutes for this cycle, we have an average cut down cycle time of 13.2%. And in this case, you can see there are components where we have no saving potential, but there are even components where we can save up to 25 minutes. And this is just the hidden potential that is within the material, and that comes from the polymer science that is natural. So not every batch of polymer is behaving the same. It's natural that some components are changing, that we have changes from summer to winter, even on the manufacturing side of a material supplier, but that's normal. But we have learned to take this into account and to deal with the material deviations and being able to help our customers to optimize the manufacturing cycles in this case. From here, we are at the end of Jorge's and my story. And I'm looking forward now to the question and answer session where Jorge and I are keen on answering your questions that were coming up during this webinar.
Yeah.
Jorge, thank you very much for your insights. And
thank you very much, yeah. Alex. And sorry, because I had some problems with my connection, so that's why my camera was turning on and turning off constantly, and I had a little bit of lag. But I expect that I have answered all your questions, and I have been clear enough for the audience. If not, of course, I can repeat any other answer, or if you have any question, go ahead, and we will be pleased to answer you, of course.
Thank you so much, Alex and Jorge. That was great to hear all of this description and understanding of the technology. I encourage our attendees to ask questions. There are no dumb questions. And you can do that by entering them in the Q&A pane. So one of the questions, how many sensors were you actually using in the mold during this testing? And also in the RTM part.
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer that question. We are talking about a part that is around 3 meters, and we just used one sensor. We saw during other tests that the temperature difference in the part was not very big. So we said that if we can control the most critical part, that is always the coolest one, we could have a very good measure of the evolution of the curing of all the part. And of course, we were very close to the resin part that was tested in the future to calculate or that was used by MMP, Materials and Processes, in Airbus, to measure the degree of cure and the glass transition temperature of that part. So we were very close to that part that was used to measure that. And also we were in the coolest zone of the beam.
Great. There was a question quickly showing up from Dr. Balazs. How do we evaluate the right spot of a sensor? You mentioned that already, Jorge, for for the coolest part in this case, the coolest part of the components. Dr. Balazs even asked thickest or thinnest part. I think that's also related to that, because usually in the thickest section, the heat transfer is a little bit different to the thinnest one. So even there, I'm always a fan of not overwhelming the mold with sensors, but to place the sensors always at the spots where we know they are critical ones. So the weakest spots in a mold at the component, because if they are cured and meet the requirements, then we can be sure that the rest does as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone has a puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's my background. we have a young one since Sunday.
Oh,
there is another question. Nitin Gupta again. Thank you for the presentation. If I use a wireless sensor like the one you used for carbon fibers, I just need to ensure we don't use a wireless sensor. It was still wired, but it was an in-mold sensor that can be reused several times. So the sensor remains a part of the mold, and therefore we can use it for several thousands of components. Or if we use, for example, IDEX sensors, so the disposable ones, Jorge, do you think there will be a difference in the measurements? Definitely yes. Because IDEX sensors, you have the finger structure, it's a printed finger structure, and they have a very, very limited penetration depth. So you scratch just on the surface. That's the big difference between the kind of sensors we have used together with Tessier, where with our in-mold sensors, we can look through a specific penetration depth, and even in the best case, look through the entire component, and the IDEX sensors that are just scratching on the surface. And in addition, I think, Jorge, you can agree on that. If we use IDEX sensors, you always have this manual effort. You need to bring in the IDEX sensors. They can be used just one time. You don't need to have some kind of disposable sensor then remaining in your component. So there are a lot of disadvantages. Disadvantages when using disposable sensors, because that is why I'm always a fan of, and I'm always suggesting to use in-mold sensors that can be used several times in there.
Yeah, I will say as well that maybe I'm not sure about that, because you have more knowledge about your sensors, of course, but even the glass fiber that is used in the IDEX ones, in the disposable sensors, do you think that can affect to the measurement, or not really, just the structure of the sensor?
Yeah, they will definitely affect the measurement, because when you're using, exactly, that's another point, Jorge, that you mentioned, because with the in-mold sensors, the permanent ones that are remaining in the mold, we have the coating on top. So we don't need a glass fiber patch on top. For the IDEX sensors, you need a glass fiber patch on top to separate the sensor surface from carbon fibers. So just that the resin can flow through. And that will definitely change even the heat transfer through the material, because then you don't measure the real component. You just measure the resin that was flowing through the glass fiber patch. And even this makes a difference. That's like when you try to analyze pure resin in the lab and you want to translate this into a composite component with glass or carbon fibers in process, you will see the deviations, because the heat transfer is simply different.
Yeah.
So are there any shortcomings and restrictions for the sensor? Can it be used with all materials, all different kinds of resins and fibers? And what about different kinds of tooling, metal tooling and composite tooling?
Yeah, both is possible. Usually the composite toolings are much thinner from the structure. So to implement the sensors is a little bit more tricky, because then on the backside of the mold, you need to put in an additional thread or whatever that the sensor can be mounted there. But we are doing that with some customers already, so it's possible, definitely. That's it. The big advantage of metal molds is that the entire mold is getting a part of the sensor. Mm-hmm. So with the metal molds, our sensor is designed in a way that every mold that is in connection with our sensor is getting a part of one of the measurement electrodes. And therefore, the electric field we are using for measurements is screening a higher volume of material. For composite molds, it's not the case. There, we have this penetration of the sensor, the specific penetration of a specific sensor, depending on the dimension of the sensor, so the thickness and the diameter of the sensor. And yeah, they would just use the penetration field inside for the composite molds.
Did you see the question on the IDEX sensors, Alex?
Yes, Nitin Gupta. I use IDEX sensors. As these sensors are small, so we generally place it on the surface of the part and not in the middle of a part. Otherwise, the contact pads are destroyed due to the pressure. Yes. Is it okay to just have information of surface, or you have any suggestions? Maybe Jorge, you can add one or two sentences to my answer. When it comes to the real process optimization, to have information from the surface is better than having no information. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to get a representative information of your components, you need to ensure that you can look into the material as much as possible. Therefore, placing IDEX sensors just on top gives you the information of the surface and not of what's going on through thickness. And that is always then the case. If you have, for example, a one-sided tooling, so you have a tooling on the bottom, then you have a dry fiber mat on top, you do a vacuum infusion setup, then you have the vacuum setup, a vacuum back on top, and you measure on the top side, then you will measure a different behavior of the material between top and bottom, because on the molding side, you have a different heat transfer than on the vacuum back side. So they are just measuring on the surface is not really representative for what is happening through thickness of the component. So that is why I'm always a fan of using in-mold sensors that can look deeper into the material. Maybe Jorge, you have additional suggestions to that?
Yeah, well, I just will add that, it's a very good explanation. The fact that the IDEX is not measuring the evolution of the material along the thickness, just in the surface or with a very little thickness, it's important to know how the difference between the temperature difference between the tool and the autoclave is affecting to your part. Mm-hmm. So when we started the validation test or other kind of test, we usually used two sensors. One in the tool surface and another one in the back surface, in the vacuum back surface. Okay. And if the part was very thick, we usually put one of the sensors just in the middle of the prepreg, of the laminate, to measure the DA values and the temperature just in the middle of the laminate. In the middle of the layup. Yeah.
For the trial series, for the validation. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you cannot do that in the series manufacturing.
No, not at all. Yeah. At least that you install it in a part that is going to be removed in the trimming. That is the case. For example, we used the reusable sensors are very good, but they make a little fingerprint in the part, in the prepreg. So we decided to put it in a place where the carbon fiber is going to be removed after the manufacturing process. I don't know the name in English. It's just a part that is going to be removed when the autoclave phase ends during the trimming stage of the part.
So some kind of overflow area.
Or even it could be a part that's going to be drilled out later for an access hole or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of opportunities.
Exactly. There is another question of Dr. Balazs. Is there any FEA solution to select the right spot? Some of our customers definitely do an FEA simulation to see the temperature variation along the entire component and the mold. So especially in, but that's not related to the aviation industry, that's usually then related to injection molding, where we see that a lot, that there are consultants that perform a lot of temperature simulations of the entire process and the mold and the heating plates of the machine, where you can then really see, okay, where is the weakest temperature spot? And this is then usually the place where we would like to place the sensors. For the composite industry, here we are always discussing with our customers, and we even did together with Airbus, to learn from their experience. So to learn from the experience of our customers, because they usually have experience depending on their manufacturing environment and their component geometry to know, okay, usually here and here, these are the weakest spots. And that is then usually the place where we would like to place the sensors.
So I guess a question to both of you, but I'd like to hear Jorge's response. How easy has it been to integrate this solution into that RTM part? And how easy do you think it will be to integrate this solution into production?
Well, I will say that it's a little bit tricky because, of course, in the RTM, we all know that there is the resin is injected with pressure, and you have to be sure that you are going to install it in a place that is completely tight, that they are not going to be any leakage. And we didn't have any problem with that because our mold has several injection parts that were not used. So we decided to use those valves or that parts. We created a tool like an adapter to put the sensor inside the mold. But in general terms, it was very easy because we finished at the beginning of this year the implementation of the edge device in the curing station, and we integrated that in the control room, of course, as well, and we did it in just 2 or 3 days, 3 days, I think, with the collaboration of Senxpert. The implementation was managed by Ensia, and the electronic part was made by Inmapa, another company, and just that part was very easy. And the tricky part was that we started implementing that during the COVID. I don't know if Alex remember that. So you know that the manufacturing or the production was already stopped. So it took 1 to 2 years to collect all the data to be sure that we have a very good, or that we have the perfect setup to measure the degree of cure and the glass transition temperature in parts. So that took like 2 years, but once we have a very good production rate, it was very quickly and we can do it. I think that if you are going to implement it in your production, process, the tricky part is to have a very good point to install the sensor in the mold without producing a leakage and assuring the tightness of the mold, of course.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the 2 to 3 days that really included the entire communication between the machine control, our system, then placing new cables around, all the kind of things there.
Yeah.
There is another question of Nitin Gupta. If we have any setup photos, how the sensor being implemented, I would like to come back to you, Nitin, after the webinar, so that we get in direct exchange, because we definitely have some pictures that we can share where you can see sensors implemented in a mold. Did you know how this looks like?
One of the things you mentioned in the beginning, Jorge, was that you liked the fact that Senxpert had already implemented this technology in other companies and industries. Alex, can you give some more detail about that? What some of the other companies and industries are that you've already proven this technology with?
Yeah. So it's not just composites. We even servicing customers in the automotive industry, in electronics encapsulation, even in the direction of wind blades, where we talk about composites again. So totally widespread. We always like to improve composites manufacturing because the benefit is huge. So every company that uses composites in manufacturing, if they can make use of the material behavior, it's a very huge potential, a very big amount of energy that can be saved and time. But depending on electronics, for example, here we are talking about insulating materials or materials that are resistive against humidity or acids. So here in this case, it's even an encapsulation of electronics to shield it against outer influences. Then the technology is even being used in injection molding for thermosets, and even now for thermoplastics, where even with the material deviations that are coming from the European Union pressure to use more recyclate content in the thermoplastic field, we see higher deviations than we are used to when using virgin material. So even that is a case where we use our technology. And then there is even a nice use case overseas in South America, where we help a company to control their manufacturing with rubber elastomers as an insulating material against high voltages. And here we created two benefits. The initial target of this customer was, if we can see that the component will fail the quality criteria or the quality assurance methodology they have implemented since years, yes, we can do so. We see that in process, but we could do more. We could really save for elastomers. We could save them in average 44% of the cycle time of curing of this rubber. So while making use of the material, it's a huge potential over widespread industries. And I even see, and that's a topic where we are not in today, but I can even see a huge potential in the marine or boat manufacturing, because they are producing big components, and they have safety times on top like hell. So that is even an industry where we are not in, but where I see a huge potential in using such kind of technology in addition.
Did you see the question that just came up, Alex?
Yes. Did I understand correct that it took 2 years to collect the data for the model? How many measurements are needed? So I think we need to separate this question, Jorge.
Yes, definitely. Because maybe I create a misunderstanding.
Because one topic is, so one part of this question is, we needed to qualify that the technology is being capable of verifying or being verified that it creates the same results like the existing quality standards. Yes, this process to verify this for the aviation industry, this took us some years together. So here we made a lot of trials from the point we started. But to showcase it now with our customers today, it's like producing 20 to 50 components in a serious manufacturing environment that gives us the information about the material behavior. And from there, we can already create the machine learning models. So that means if I translate this into composite manufacturing, maybe Jorge producing 50 components, maybe this takes 2 months or maybe a little bit more. Then we have enough data to create the machine learning model to optimize the manufacturing. If we talk about another industry like injection molding, for example, then we have within 1 day, we have enough data to create a machine learning model. So it's always depending on the industry.
Yeah. And the period of time was higher because of the COVID-19. As you may know, the aircraft industry was very affected by that, and the production rate was decreased. So the number of parts that were manufactured per month were very low. So that is why it took more time to verify and to qualify that process and to be sure that the quality standards are the same that we had before in that part or in that stage that Alex mentioned.
But that would change, because if you were, say, press molding something and the cycle time was already a bit different, then it would be different, like you said, with injection molding.
Yeah.
And then probably one last question before we wrap up for the day. Can you just, we just started talking about the machine learning part. I guess just to go back, would you need to establish that machine learning based on the material system, right? And the part. I mean, that's the whole idea.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's a very, very good topic and a good point, Ginger, because every manufacturing environment, even if two customers of us use the same resin system, the manufacturing environment is different. They use different machines, different mold geometries. So every manufacturing environment of our customers is unique. Yes, we can translate a little bit of the material science that is there from the laboratory, but then to create the machine learning models is always depending on the manufacturing environment of our customers. So we train always with a new customer, a new machine learning model. So it's really unique for a specific manufacturing environment.
Well, and that's the whole purpose to do it, because like you said, what you discovered from years ago in Netsch is that even if you're doing the DSC and DMA, the resin isn't necessarily doing that when it's in the part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a picture of the momentum, what you can create in the lab. It's a picture of the momentum of this batch of material you're characterizing, and you cannot take into account in the lab what's going on with the material during shipping, storage, whatever can happen, even in manufacturing. You can have a failure in the machine and the material sees 80 degrees for, instead of seeing it 30 minutes before injecting, maybe it sees the temperature for 1.5 hours. So the material is changing. But yeah, it doesn't mean that the material needs to be wasted. And this is where we can help to change the manufacturing capabilities.
It's a good to mention that, because that is another thing that is has a very good potential, and is when some kind of vacuum leakage is detected in the back, for example, for Preprex, I am talking now, not RTM process, it's good to know how was the process of the degree of cure and the glass transition temperature to have a decision or to take a decision about if it's necessary to keep on with the process or it's necessary to stop it, to abort it, and to see if we can relaunch another cycle, repairing or fixing the vacuum bag, and that is a pretty good thing that we can implement, or that we can or that can be very useful for us to have that information and to take a decision based on the data that came from the part, not the external parameters like temperature or vacuum or pressure, because we have information directly from the part.
You know, one last thing I would like to bring up is that we're entering this new age where we want to use more bio-based content and more recycled content. I would imagine that could be really useful if you have this kind of system, because if you have your part, but yet now you have the opportunity to use, say, an epoxy that has more bio content, well, it would be really nice to know how it's going to operate in your part. I mean, it's all great to have the lab data, but like you said, when you start changing over and to look at these new systems, it could be really nice to have this kind of data to say yes or no.
Yeah, definitely.
For all the bio-based materials, the water content is deviating from time to time. And that's a big challenge for our customers as well.
Okay. All right. Well, we're at the top of the hour. I want to thank again Dr. Alexander Kalupka from SenseExpert and Jorge Blanco Fernandez from INSEA for this webinar. We invite you to reach out to them to learn more about what they've done and where they see this technology going in the future. And we also want to thank you, all of our attendees. We really appreciate that you are here with us, and we hope to see you again soon at the next Composites World webinar. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you, Chincha. Thank you, Jorge. And thank you to all the attendees.
Thank you very much and have a nice day.
Der Composites Launch Podcast gefällt dir? Dann empfehle diesen bitte weiter. Du willst noch mehr Tipps zu Composites oder Sichtbarkeit in LinkedIn? Vernetze dich mit Ilkay Özgesolu auf LinkedIn und trete der exklusiven LinkedIn-Gruppe Composites Launch bei. Dort wirst du dich mit Gleichgesinnten über die neuesten Technologietrends austauschen. Tschüss und auf Wiedersehen!